Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone number's in here if you'd like to call in and ask questions or make comments about something to do with the economy or investing or things of that ilk. 773-1400 if you're in Eastville County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And as a form of disclosure, the Personal Wealth Coach is not merely a radio program of stellar quality that appears out of the sound waves.
Oh, wait a minute. The stellar
and
quality,
the radio waves.
Wait, you're saying that we have a quality program?
We have a stellar quality program.
The stars explode.
You got it.
That's probably what's
they
going on.
They also collapse into white dwarfs, and they become black holes. And
from
so
their own
truly,
weight.
Yes, it's
yes,
truly
the,
stellar.
The
yes.
weight of our hubris is
right,
forming
that's it,
fusion
right,
at the
that's
moment.
It, right.
Yeah.
And we give off a lot of hot air,
right.
A lot of heat.
A lot of gas comes out of us as well.
Burning, in other words, the nature of our show is burning balls of gas. Yes.
Not much in the way of plasma, but, you know, we've got plasma screens in here. It's pretty close.
We do?
I believe that's a plasma screen right in front of you.
I don't, it might be, but I suspect
it could be a liquid crystal display.
I don't know.
How stellar is it? It's plasma.
It's something.
It is.
I don't know what it is.
For the next 2 hours, we are going to be taking apart this monitor to determine whether or not it's liquid crystal or plasma.
I think it's liquid crystal because when you press on it, it wrinkles and moves, changes the colors.
If you press on it for long enough and hard enough, that fingerprint will stay in there.
So it's probably liquid crystal display.
Could be.
LCD.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach...
Stellar,
in addition to being a stellar radio program that mysteriously appears on the airwaves.
It doesn't really appear. It just makes sounds.
Okay. Mysteriously manifests itself on the airwaves.
Right.
On Saturday mornings, and this particular one is on Saturday, February 7th, it is also the name of an investment advisory firm that manages portfolios and helps people plan for retirement and stuff like that in Salado, Texas. And that coincidence of name is not a coincidence.
So what you're saying is the coincidence is not a coincidence?
You
so
it.
You could have
yes.
just skipped yes. it all and just said the reason for the name.
The reason for the name, yes. Is because it's, I already said it was a firm in Salado. I mean,
but the coincidence is not a coincidence.
And the firm was there before the radio program, therefore the firm is precedent.
It's very similar to when people say it is what it is.
Exactly.
I go, did you need to say that?
Yes, absolutely. Because so much, the reality is that so much of what exists, particularly on radio, talk radio, is not what it is.
That's true. That is so true.
I was listening to Rush Limbaugh say that because it didn't snow very much in New England when the weather forecast, or at least in New York, when the weather forecast came up, there was no such thing as global warming.
Ah. So the glaciers that have been melting for the last several thousand years are
absolutely
not part of a warming pattern.
No, absolutely not, no.
Oh, boy.
But at any rate, you know, that's his opinion, and he has the right to his opinion. We have freedom of speech in the United States. I thank God for that.
I've told you about the neuroscience behind some of that. And,
yeah, sure, and I completely...
It's worth bringing up again that there is a great study. Let me see who did it here, because me talking about the studies and not giving a cite is as bad as Rush Limbaugh talking about
The fact that global warming doesn't exist. Yeah, I completely understand that. And the fact that people have asked me if I believe in global warming, and I said, you don't have to believe in it or not believe it. I said, go to Glacier National Park and try to figure out why they named it Glacier National Park. And they look at me sort of blankly. I said, well, just go up there. You can't, it's really, really, really hard to find glaciers in Glacier National Park.
Throw in another one when you're thinking about any of the classic British novels written in the late 19th century. They include snow in winter in London. So we've got Oliver Twist, you've got A Tale of Two Cities, you've got, I mean, you can just begin the list and start going down. You can do Ebenezer Scrooge.
And
you have snow in London.
Christmas.
At Christmas,
right.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
That's, I mean, this. There's plenty of argument room around whether or not humans are the reason why global warming exists. But to argue that it exists is kind of silly, because if you look
at...
You
argue that it doesn't exist.
To argue about its existence is kind of silly, just because if you look at the land bridge that was across between Siberia and Alaska at one point, if you look at Alexandria, which is in
Egypt. Right.
And
it's also in Virginia,
though. Oh, yeah, it is also in Virginia.
And I have looked at the one in Virginia, but not the one in Egypt.
Well, when you realize that it is meters, many feet underwater, because the water has been rising. Well, what caused that water to rise? Well, melting ice caused that water to...
No, it's very obvious. Have you ever seen the Mississippi River?
I have.
It's flowing into the ocean, right?
Oh, that's it. It's probably just rained a lot, and that brought
the water to rise. Well, I don't know about the rain. It's the rivers flowing into the ocean that causes the ocean to rise, because how many rivers flow out of the ocean? None.
Well,
therefore, the ocean will
not any freshwater rivers, that's for sure.
I mean, you think about it. All those rivers flowing into the ocean, why shouldn't the ocean rise?
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. Now that you mention that. Yeah.
See?
Okay, Duke University.
Uh-huh.
Published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology.
Oh.
But
who wrote this?
Who wrote this?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give a side, you have to give the...
Aaron Kay and Troy Campbell.
What do they know?
Psychologists.
Oh, okay.
They look at brain scans all day long. And what they did is they took a group of Democrats and a group of Republicans, and they didn't mix them.
I started to say
that would have been bad. That would have been a different study altogether.
That's like matter and anti-matter.
Right. You get Congress. It's so they took them and they showed them a series of data. They showed the Republicans and the Democrats the same data. They showed them first the Republicans. They showed global warming data. And they showed it at great length. They showed the same data that the scientists are using. And then they turned and they said, all right, well, we have two options that we can use to fix this. And depending on how they laid out those options, the belief in global warming in a Republican was very clear. If a government said, this was one of the options to fix it, if a government said carbon credits, Republicans didn't believe in global warming, because it was interfering with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if they said that there was a free market approach, more Republicans believed in global warming than if they said that there was a governmental approach only. Well, just think about that for a second. The approach to curing the problem lets you know whether or not there's a problem. There's a little lack of rationality there. Then with the Democrats...
Makes perfectly good sense.
So the folks at Duke weren't going to be one-sided and be in the ivory tower, nose in the air type stuff. They turned and gave also this same data to the Republicans. They gave it to the Democrats. There's a second subject that they gave as well, and the second subject was gun violence. When gun control laws have been enacted or removed.
Mm-hmm.
In places that gun control laws were enacted, Washington, D.C., Chicago, they've got lots of data, and it shows gun violence went way up. Not just up a little bit, but
right.
Way up.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And then when gun control measures were removed and more rights to owning firearms were given to the private citizen, gun violence dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Democrats were given two solutions to gun violence. And anything that didn't include the government getting involved and limiting the rights of private citizens to own guns caused them to not believe the data.
Mm-hmm.
They simply emotionally were not capable of believing the data, even though it's from the same sets of organizations that did the global warming data.
You know,
if you lose your rationality because of the emotion that you have, the passion that you have for a political organization or for a sports team or for anything else, and I say if, when we lose rationality, if we never pick up on it in our own minds, if we never stop for a second and say, wait a minute, why do I think global warming doesn't exist? Or wait a minute, why do I think that more gun rights leads to less gun crime? Then you're questioning the thing that you have sacrificed for, the thing that you believe in, the platform. I think we'll make a whole lot more progress together as a people, as a country, if we will look around and find the good ideas from both sides instead of saying that's a Democrat, Democrats do not have good ideas, or that's a Republican, Republicans do not have good ideas.
If Lynn Woolley is listening to you, you're in deep trouble, buddy.
Oh, I know. That's exactly the point.
I got in trouble this week because he listened to me last week.
Well, and me as well. It was my statement about painting with a broad brush that there is a large number of Islamic population that are not extremists. And then
I keep asking him the same question, by the way. Just exactly how many people from Malaysia have attacked the United States?
It's a good question.
Because that's where the majority of all
Muslims are. How about the Turks?
Anyway, what I wanted to go on, there's another thing that goes with this, and it has a lot to do, believe it or not, if anyone is listening, this has a lot to do with the way people invest, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why we like to discuss this and dig into this. But the issue of measles non-vaccination, or non-vaccinations, period, I really was fascinating. The Economist had an article. Practically everybody's had an article on it now. But the one in The Economist noted Central Texas. Central Texas, right here where we are in Central Texas.
The Economist is a British-based
magazine. They noted that the concentration of non-vaccinated children here in Central Texas is one of the two highest concentrations.
It's Austin.
Well, no. Apparently, it isn't as much in Austin
Dallas.
As it is in this area up here where we have there was a correlation, by the way, with right-wing and left-wing positions.
Yeah.
This is what
extreme left-wings don't vaccinate their kids. Extreme right-wings don't vaccinate their kids.
So it was pretty fascinating. This is the kind of thing you're talking about where the Democrats and the Republicans both refuse to believe anything that ran against. Both the Democrats and the Republicans that are at the extreme edges, both are convinced that science and government is lying to them.
Well, there's a Gallup poll came out this week that said that people are more likely to believe a Facebook post about vaccinations than their doctors.
I can understand that.
I mean, I understand that doctors, and the more we have the internet available, the more that we can see that doctors are sometimes wrong.
Mm-hmm. But you see, that's news when a doctor, when a physician is wrong, or when medical science is wrong, it makes big news.
Kind of big news, yeah.
But they don't announce when medical science is right.
No. It's just like the newspaper doesn't say, and yesterday, 5,427 airplanes landed safely.
And it doesn't say that yesterday, no one in the United States contracted cholera.
Correct.
And the fact that the medical science wiped out...
And polio and
wiped out
smallpox.
Polio, smallpox, measles.
Measles was gone in the year 2000. In the year 2010, was not a big deal. And now it is. And I have a newborn. And she cannot be vaccinated for a year. And there are five new cases in Chicago of children under the age of one who cannot be vaccinated getting measles.
Mm-hmm.
And this outbreak happened because of unvaccinated people. I don't want my daughter to die.
Or
to have brain damage, or to have scarring for the rest of her life. Get your kids vaccinated. This is insane. I mean, yes, there is a small correlation, and the small correlation is so tiny that we're talking about it's off the charts, to sicknesses coming from vaccination. I'm not talking about autism. There is no correlation there.
Well,
I'm talking about if you get a live vaccine for the flu, you might get a fever. You're going to have issues with vaccines, but if you look at the number of lives that we're saving, if you decide not to risk it for your kid, they might get a little bit sick for a little bit.
It's the problem of the commons again.
Yeah, it's the plight of the commons. This is economics. This is actually very, very basic economics. It's not quite 101 stuff, but it's very close, where we're talking about health is something that is available for everyone if everyone sacrifices for it. But if you decide to rest on the actions of others, their vaccinations will keep me safe. All you're doing is negating their vaccinations. Mm. It's in Flight of the Commons when we talk about tuna in the ocean, when the United States says, all right, the tuna population is dropping. It is. Tuna population's dropping. This is not something that's arguable. Just look up the data. Tuna population's dropping. So the United States limits the amount of tuna fishing that its fishers can do.
Mm-hmm.
Japan, at the same moment, raised the amount of tuna that
right.
their people could get.
And
the following year, the United States raised the amount of tuna that their fishers could
yep.
get because they didn't want the Japanese to get it all.
Right.
Well, neither of them are solving the problem. We have to cooperate sometimes. I realize that a major component of capitalism is competition. But when we have a shared resource that isn't owned by anyone, if we don't have some form of regulation, some form of cooperation, it leads to destruction. Just look at Easter Island. Okay. Well, now I've been...
Why do I need to look at Easter Island?
For eggs. No. For lack of people, because they all decided that they needed to build big statues, and they cut down all the trees. And at some point, I'm sure someone said, we're running out of trees. And they said, there's always new trees,
mm-hmm.
except there were not always new trees when you cut them all down.
You got a point. Well, let's do change the subject just a little bit. By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
The stock market rose 3% last week. Okay. Actually, more than 3% if you look at some parts of the stock market. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up like 3.84%. The Standard & Poor's 500 was up 3.02%. By the way, I always find it interesting, Barron's and other places, when they do their headline, sometimes they cite the Dow Jones Industrial Average as the market, which Barron's would tend to do.
The Dow Jones
Despite
Industrial Average...
Despite the fact that they don't own it anymore.
Right.
But in other times, they cite the S&P 500 as the market. And so the headline, I don't know who does headlines, but... The stock market theoretically rose around 3% last week. Still not back to where it was in late December of last year, but it's well on the way up. And there were a couple of good news items there and some items that are either good news or bad news, depending on where you are and what you want to do. For example, I was noting during the week as I'm allocating portfolios that man, we bailed out of bonds like a year ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have risen. And I was really, 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 really tempted to get back into intermediate-term bonds in one portfolio because, doggone it, look at all those gains we missed. Well,
yeah.
I overcame the discipline of
yeah.
portfolio management, the discipline we have, and the fact that I would get beat up in the investment company in the investment committee meeting. prevented me from even suggesting this. But what was fascinating is the next day, the Treasury bond rose from, I don't remember where it was, down around 1%, up to almost 2%, went up to 1.94%. So if you'd been in 10-year Treasuries on that particular day, you would be really unhappy today. Well, maybe you were, maybe you won't.
That's actually a great signal that we use in our office. You've mentioned it in the past. The old lady in tennis shoes coming in with a suggestion on what to buy. And I 5 months ago, I had an older lady come in and say, what do you think about buying oil? And I said, it's very important to buy oil. Without it, your car will not function.
That's right, dude. You do need to, every 3,000 to 5,000 miles, you should buy oil for your car.
Replace the old oil with new oil. And
right.
she said, no, I mean actual buying oil. People have been talking about buying oil, and oil's been going up, and there's no sign of it going down. And I said, oh, boy. Well, there's the flag. There's the signal.
Yeah, when the little old ladies decide to buy
commodities. It's time to get it's the top of the craze. It is. Everyone knows that this is the place where you cannot lose money, which by definition means it's a place where you are about to lose a lot of money.
So year to date, for whatever it's worth, the Dow is plus 0.01%. The Standard & Poor's 500 is down 0.17%, which means that after a month we've gone nowhere, but we expended a great deal of sound and fury getting
it. We had a lot of fun doing it, though.
Yeah, yeah, so that's cool. And why? Well, I don't know. there's a couple of things happened.
Why? Because people bought and sold roughly equally.
And,
for a month.
And the reason for the 3% jump was given, whether it's true or not. We had this nice employment report came out, and it turned out over the last 3 months, we've had the best hiring surge that we've had since the 1990s.
257,000 non-farm
payrolls.
But if you include revisions, upward revisions for prior months, you get 404,000 newly employed people.
We got like 500,000 newly employed people in the past few months.
500,000 here, 500,000 there.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, and the other thing, and this is in some ways even more important, is the wages of sin are death. Wages went up 2.2% year over year.
Now, at the same time, the unemployment rate went up to 5.7 from 5.6.
Because more people started looking for jobs.
Well, we just had 404,000 people. Wait a minute. What's going on here?
Well,
there's
just
funny numbers.
The labor participation rate went up.
Yes.
Which means that there now that more jobs are more available, there are more people who are willing to look for jobs.
Right. There was a report that came out last week that said that this is the lowest point of population percentage workforce since World War II. And I had some problem with those numbers, and when I really dug into them, the numbers weren't exactly right. But what they were saying is correct. We have not recovered to the point we were in 2007 as far as the percentage of the population working. And that's what we're seeing here. More people are going back looking for jobs that said, I'm not going to look for a job. So we see the unemployment rate go up at the same time that we had this huge burst in hiring. Well, that's why they decided to go look for jobs. Because they knew somebody that got a job, and they said, well, I'm going to try looking for a job now.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And so, and I read an interesting little article in Barron's, The Economist, or the column.
Barron's The Economist?
The name of the column is either The Economy or The Economist. Anyway, and it, in there, the writer pointed out that it's entirely possible that the unemployment rate is running 1% lower than we think it is.
That's quite possible.
Because some of the people who, this was at least a speculation, and I'll find the article here in a minute, but it was at least a speculation by the writer's part that the ability to become an unemployed person as opposed to just a person who isn't working, all they have to do on the survey is say, have you looked for jobs? Have you looked at maybe getting a job or looked for a job in any form or fashion in the last month? And the answer could be, I glanced at the wanted ads and thought maybe, okay, you're unemployed. And one of the things that is, at least in what I've discovered, is when I see data like the low participation rate, particularly among men.
Low participation, that's just the number of people that want
or
percentage. Have jobs
right.
in the population.
I generally can look among our clients and see the same trend going on and understand it very well.
Right.
And in this case, I spoke to a person Friday who we're doing an account review. And or a client review, and I spoke with him at his home, and it was his wife is very well employed, has a very good income, so he is staying home and raising the children. which seems to me like a perfectly rational thing to do.
Makes sense.
And it just occurred to me that I know a good half dozen people like that, whereas there was a time when I wouldn't have known anybody right. where the man was staying home and raising the children.
And there was a time not that long back when both of them had jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changed because they've made decisions. Mm-hmm. She's
right.
making more money, and he's decided to spend more time with the kids.
Yeah, and so this sort of begins to explain this. It explains why the economy is doing well, and yet you have a larger percentage of men not working than we've seen in the past. It isn't men laying around at house doing nothing but drinking beer and watching television. I think a big piece of that, particularly among the younger people who are the biggest piece of this growth of men not being employed, who are otherwise eligible to be employed, I honestly think a big piece of that is a generational change, whereas the boomers would never dream of a man staying home and taking care of the kids. It would be quite exceptional. I think in the X generation, and even more so in the millennial generation, you're seeing an equality so that if the wife, for example, has a better education and better employment possibilities in some cases, the man is staying home and raising children. And I think it's perfectly reasonable. I love to dig into these statistics that are these alarmist statistics.
I've got a lot of statistics to talk about, too, about how silly they are. So, yeah, what are the alarmist ones that you're talking
about? Well,
that's
what I'm talking about. The fact that there's so many younger men dropping out of the workforce and nobody can figure out why. Well, why don't you ask them? You know,
yeah,
ask the men who dropped out of the workforce. But they don't do that, so.
Here's an alarmist number for you. Non-farm productivity output per hour declined at 1.8% annualized for that last quarter.
Really?
Well, you can tell we're geeks. This is the stuff that we're like, oh, non-farm productivity declined 1.8%. What does that mean? It's a good question. It's flat for the year for non-farm productivity. The areas where it's way up, and by way up, I mean way up, is in manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just like we said, the huge number of jobs just got added. That's private sector. More jobs were added in the private sector than what we saw there. The government is still shrinking.
Right. And well, that's going to bug some people around here. The fact that both the federal and state governments are still...
They're still going smaller.
They're still shrinking.
We can look at the numbers. So then this productivity figure. When we're seeing productivity rises in manufacturing, those are real numbers. Those are good numbers because you can say how many people use the word widgets. We can use any – how many electrical boards.
It's dollars, it's dollars output per hour actually
right.
in product.
How many output dollars per hour are you doing with a product? And we have good numbers on that because there are solid products.
Mm-hmm.
The service industry, we get into the realm of voodoo. What is the productivity in the service world? And much of our economy is now in the service world.
Yeah.
When you talk about the creation of software, is that service or product? How much software being written in code coming out per hour is measured for the productivity? And the answer is it's not. They don't know how to measure software being written. They don't, because there's not a
right.
widget that comes out at the end of it with a price tag associated with it. They may write lots and lots of code for one project that may take a long time. That's what I'm talking about. There are certain numbers that don't make sense.
And I don't know that we have any idea how to include that in the GDP.
We don't have a clue.
But I do know that we need to play some commercials. And this is KTEM and the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're going to play some of those commercials so KTEM can stay on the air and Town Square Media can continue to be Town Square Media and not become like Radio Shack and declare Chapter 11. So we will be back on the other side of these important messages from Town Square Media.
If you'd like to call us,
773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, otherwise.
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else.
We'll be back. And
Jake
McClure. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello. Can you hear
caller,
me? Caller, can you hear me? Hello, caller.
Would you want to turn up that number two? The knob.
Oh, yeah.
that
caller, now try it.
Okay. Hey, an observation. It seems like, you know, the stock market's blowing and going. Good jobs report yesterday. But yet, seems like in the last couple of months, a lot of Fortune 500 companies are slashing thousands of jobs, and it just seems like there's a disconnect. Can you comment on that, or am I imagining things? I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
Well, county? No, actually, they're hiring.
Well, there's certain places
the
that
oil
are
companies
trouble.
Are laying people off. I don't know why the oil drilling companies would lay people off, but they are. The oil drilling companies are laying people off, and you do have individual firms that are in a hurt for some reason that are laying people off. But the
Amazon's an example.
The net result is there's actually a lot more hiring than there is firing right now.
Right, Amazon is struggling with its earnings, but they're doing it on purpose. They've been struggling with their earnings on purpose for a long time. They're trying to get to a place where they are the go-to. So that's led to some stuff. Bank of America's had some issues. You basically go through a list of companies that are changing up the way they do business completely and experimenting with new things, and that's where the losses tend to be.
And I don't know that there have been rumors going around, by the way. For instance, there was a rumor going around that was very pervasive, and I saw it on Facebook about that Microsoft was going to lay off a lot of people, and Microsoft said, huh? Nobody told us, and they didn't lay off a lot of people. I think there's an awful lot more rumor of laying off than there is actual laying off going on. In many cases, also, the news media will report a layoff, but they won't report that the same company turns around and rehires those people in a separate division.
There's another thing. People that are doing business in Europe right now, there's two sides of this, but the biggest part is that people are not spending as much money in Europe as they used to be. That has an impact. Our trade deficit in December was markedly strange in that it said that our exports dropped drastically and our imports jumped drastically, when the reality is that the reason why the exports dropped is because we exported oil at a lower price than usual. We probably exported more oil than we ever have, but by doing it at a lower price, it looks like our exports dropped. And our imports went way up because it's cheaper to buy stuff in Europe right now. We can look over at Europe and find the same items that we would buy here
and
for less money.
And from Japan. The Japanese yen, for whatever it's worth, has dropped 50% against the dollar in the past few years, which is just...
Well, when they have
pretty astonishing
220% of their debt is their debt GDP. They've got enough debt for 220% of their total GDP.
That is, and I was wondering how in the world. By the way, that's something I was looking at this week. Since you brought that up, How can the Japanese maintain such a huge governmental debt against its GDP and not collapse?
Right.
Well, the answer is the Chinese total debt is larger than as a percentage of GDP than the Japanese debt. It's just that in China, the government doesn't have much debt.
Right. It's the government in Japan that does.
But the corporations and the people do. Whereas in Japan, the people and the corporations have almost no debt.
Yeah.
The government has the debt.
The government nationalized their debt.
So what
basically, back when the zombie banks were running around with mortgages and so on, the government came and swept up all that stuff.
And so what you really need to do if you're looking at debt to GDP, and it's really hard to find, and I can understand why it's not well published, and that is what you take, and it's very slow, I mean, it's very big lag on it, is the total debt of everybody and everything, including the government, against the GDP. And the reason... that's a very unpopular number. Is in a healthy economy, it runs around 300%.
Yeah,
and people look at 300% debt to GDP ratio. It scares the fire out of people, and it shouldn't.
Well, if you think that the median home, that's the middle. That's not the average. That's like right in the middle.
Is that like in Meridian?
I think the last time I looked at it was $246,000.
Okay.
The median income is $50,000. So if somebody can get a mortgage at $50,000, and we'll even say that the $50,000 a year people are getting smaller homes.
Right.
So let's call it $200,000 as a mortgage.
Because everybody doesn't have a home. Median income is for everybody, including the people who don't have homes.
Right.
So you can't really compare those.
So let's even say it's $180,000 or $150,000. Well, that's three times the annual earnings.
Of a single person.
Of a single person.
But in most cases, it's two people working that own that median home.
So even if you say the median home is $246,000 and they've got two people earning $50,000, you've got 1.5 times your income as debt just for an asset.
And that's before they buy cars.
And then you got cars and student loans and credit cards, and you throw all that in. And generally people, particularly starting out when they're in the growth phase of their life, tend to have about a 300% debt to income.
Which is, by the way, apparently healthy across the world.
Yeah, as long
unless you're in Greece.
Now, there are some issues. If you don't pay back your debt, it gets bigger. It's kind of amazing. And once it gets beyond that, it's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to be in a place where you don't have that debt to begin with. That's even better. That's great. But when we're talking about what is your average form of healthiness, this is just like medicine. It's really interesting. When you go digging through studies on medicine, there aren't that many studies on healthy people. Have you noticed that?
Actually, I have noticed some studies on healthy people.
They're just not that many.
They just don't make...
Right. You've got a lot of studies on people that are sick, but the people that are healthy, I mean, how many times have you been in a study about being healthy? That's not what people do.
You actually have to go look for them, but they're there.
And in the economic world, we tend to look at sick economies or sick companies a lot more than we do at healthy companies, too.
There's a world of difference between studies and what gets reported in the media, because the media reports bad news. Speaking of which, by the way, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers again, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Oh, there's a lot of things. Did you notice that Bitcoins are down to about $200 and dropping?
I hadn't looked at them in the last several weeks, but that doesn't surprise me. The new regulation by the United States government is probably part of that.
Well, it's apparently China basically banned them.
Yeah.
And
Russia's still using them, and that's why they're still
like
at 200.
300, in order for the Bitcoin miners to be profitable, I was reading, it requires a Bitcoin at like $365. And as what's happening is you have still a lot of miners. It's the same thing that happened with oil. You have these huge computer banks with huge capital
expenditures going into them.
And they may be losing money, but if they shut them down, they really seriously lose money. So they are continuing to manufacture Bitcoins. And as they manufacture the Bitcoins, there's more Bitcoins, but fewer people are using them. And as a result now, the Bitcoin is starting to unwind to the point of, where were they? They were around 2,000, weren't they, at one point?
Well, they spiked up there somewhere in that region.
They're now down to about 200. So about a 90%. If you bought Bitcoins at the peak of the market, which is one of the things we said not to do.
Right. Don't buy them, period.
You would have had a 90% loss.
This is a piece. I realize it gets technical when we talk about Bitcoins. It's an encryption currency, a cryptocurrency. And basically, every Bitcoin is simply a set of keys to be used in encrypted communication. People are actually starting to buy Bitcoins to use for encrypted communication these days, which is silly.
They were
because
originally designed to do.
Right.
There'd be a one-time use.
Right. One-time use deal. You use the keys, and now they're gone. Well, this is why it became popular to use them as a currency, is because once you've used the keys, they're worthless.
But you can transfer. There's a gigantic internet-like Bitcoin accounting system that runs through many, many, many computers in many nations.
Yeah.
It basically says if I pay you a Bitcoin, it transfers to your ownership.
Right. And it goes into what's called a wallet. But if you ever open that Bitcoin and look at it, actually look at what the keys are, it becomes worthless.
Well, actually, if you dissect a dollar bill,
it's worthless as well.
Take it apart and figure out and pull the little thing out of the money. And
pull that little
thread out of there.
Thread, yeah.
And then it becomes
worthless. So with a Bitcoin, it isn't whether or not the idea is feasible. It is. It's a good idea if you can use a value as a commodity and use it to trade for things. That's kind of what money is. However, this is going back a step to bartering. And then you throw in the fact that the best Bitcoins are operating at 256K encryption. 256K used to be top-of-the-line encryption. You couldn't get better. We're now into 512K, which is double that. We're moving up into the 1024K, which is 1 meg encryption.
I'll take your word for that.
Which is 4 times the encryption level of the Bitcoin. And when you get to that level of encryption, if people are still buying the old stuff because it's encryptable, eventually we'll be in a place where we look back and you go, why are you buying that? You can't use it for anything.
But the bottom line to it is, what I wanted to point out, and I think it's important, is that the Bitcoin continues to fall in value.
Yes.
And people who were asking about Bitcoins a few years ago, and we were saying stay away from them. We have another commercial break that we're going to do, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here are still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about this a little more next hour. But there are some things in the world to worry about.
Really?
Yeah, there really are. And
big ones.
Actually, the United States economy is humming along very, very, very well. And the issue is, once you look outside the United States, things begin to get a little more interesting. For example, Finland just offered a 5-year government note, which people are buying, with a negative 0.5% rate of return. And I'm not talking about, after inflation, a negative 0.5% rate of return. I'm talking about you have to pay the government, in effect, 0.5% a year for 5 years to own this note, because you will get back. They promise you that you'll get back less than you put in, and it's selling rapidly because Finland is in pretty good economic condition. shorter term, the Swiss are in the same boat. And what's happening when this goes on is people actually think that the euro is going to continue to drop in value when they do this type of thing. They're making a bet, in effect, that Europe is in worse shape than we think it is. Meanwhile, Greece has announced that they're almost out of cash.
Yeah.
And that if the European Union, if the Eurozone does not cough up a few billion dollars in few billion euros in cash for them, they are going to default within weeks. And interestingly enough, the Germans are saying, not so, we don't believe it. So it'll be a really fascinating, from a sort of a cruel, not very pleasant perspective, to watch how this works out. Because if Greece defaults, it effectively, what they've said is, they will be out of cash. They will not be able to pay their pensions. They will not be able to pay their government employees. They will not be able to pay their creditors. They won't be able to pay the garbage collectors. They will have to effectively leave the Eurozone literally within weeks. This is, and it's been a threat that somewhere down the road they might do it at some point. That would basically solve the problem of what will happen if Greece decides to leave the Eurozone, because they will in just a few weeks if what they're saying is true. And there's a lot of support for the fact that it is true. And let me tell you why. This is one of those fascinating things. And it has to do with the vaccination rate in the United States.
Really?
The Greek people do not trust their government.
Yeah, they don't want to pay taxes, and they don't want to be...
And the majority of people in Greece are failing to pay their taxes because they expect the government to collapse economically. And if they can pay their taxes in drachma instead of euros, This is what deflation does, by the way. They're not paying their debts and they're not paying their taxes. Why are they not paying their debts? Well, because their economy has so collapsed. By the way, their unemployment rate is skyrocketing. Their economy is so collapsed in this deflationary environment that the debt load that the average person in Greece now carries, which was quite reasonable a few years ago, has multiplied by a factor of about five. So that, for example, let's say you have a $100,000 mortgage on your house and your house is worth $200,000, you probably feel pretty good about that. However, in a deflationary environment like we've seen in Greece and in Southern Europe, the house would have dropped from $200,000 to $100,000, and your debt load would have effectively gone from $100,000 to $400,000 or $500,000. And at that point, you probably could not afford to continue to make the payment, so you just stop. And when you get a bill for your taxes, you just don't pay the taxes because you don't have that much money. And that has a horrific implication. The problem that's going on in Europe regarding this, by the way, we have the same thing in the United States. I don't know if you knew that or not. It's called Mississippi.
Oh, yeah.
Mississippi is to the United States what Greece is to Europe. We pump, as a nation, a lot of money into Mississippi to keep it from sinking beneath the Mississippi and the, you know, financially collapsing.
Yeah.
And we just live with that. That's just part of life here in the United States. By the way, Mississippi has a larger percentage of the United States economy than Greece does of the European economy. But because we have a central government and we've decided to keep it together, we've been doing that. And we've got some more things. We'll discuss it next hour.
Lots of good stuff for next hour.
There are some really scary things out there, not just the thing that Greece might go. Well, okay,
right.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we do have voicemail on weekends, Real People During the Week, 947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail, Real People, at toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can listen to podcasts. You can look at our ugly mugs. You can read about our philosophy. Please be good on your medications in the process. Until next hour.
This has been the Personal Wealth
Coach. Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.